Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all Rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.
Welcome to the MC Universe. We're the Lorehounds, your guides to the multiverse and beyond. I'm David.
And I'm Jean.
And remember, that's Jean, not John.
In this episode of the MC Universe, we will be talking about some of the newer characters that are being introduced for Phase 5 shows and movies. Then we'll talk about some of the larger forces at work in the MCU. And finally, we will dive into Quantumania and Kang the Conqueror. A quick breakdown of what was in the latest Ant-Man movie.
A few reminders before we get into our episode. The MC Universe podcast is an occasional podcast, meaning that our plan is to drop an episode in between MCU release dates for shows and movies. The goal of this podcast is to help you with the meta context for what you're going to be seeing on screen. We had hoped to have this particular episode out before the Ant-Man movie dropped, but we had some technical issues with the recording, and then we just had some normal life stuff getting in the way of our schedules to get synced back up. But hey, here we are.
If you have questions, comments, fan theories, or industry news that you want to share, drop us a note. Send us feedback to mcu@thelorehounds.com or head over to our website at thelorehounds.com and use the contact form or record a voicemail via our nifty web interface. We'll save up all the feedback and then answer those questions in the next podcast.
We love making podcasts for our listeners, and sometimes our listeners want to support us in return. While you can always get our ad-supported podcasts on our main feed, we also have a Patreon for those who want to join our ever-growing Lorehounds community. For just as little as $3 a month, you can subscribe today and get ad-free versions of all of our podcasts, early access to new podcasts, and the occasional post-credit bloopers, and much more. We've got some more things in the works, so stay tuned.
Also, if you want to take a moment, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. We'd really appreciate it. Ratings and reviews help other people find the podcast, which will help us make more podcasts.
We've got some programming notes about projects we're working on at the end of the episode. Other than that, I think our intro stuff is all done. Jean, let's get into it. We've got a lot to talk about today.
Sure. So the first thing I want to say is that we want to hit Quantumania, the movie.
Okay.
Because Phase 5 is here, is on, and is popping, and we are about to go on a really, really strange and wonderful ride.
All right. That sounds good.
Kang the Conqueror. He's a great character, great villain. I definitely want to talk about him a little bit, but in the context of what Jonathan Majors is doing with the character, he's just knocking it out the ballpark.
Nice.
After that, we can talk about what Phase 5 will lead us into, some of the characters that we hope to see, some of the characters that we know are in Phase 5, and also what the forces at work could be in the future for the MCU.
Great. So sort of the meta context forces, the bigger themes and meanings behind all of this stuff. Because I don't know, you've been doing me some education on this. It's not just base superhero kapow type stuff, but there's actually some really deeper, more metaphysical things that are at play. And
I think so.
Yeah, and I think it's helpful to lift that up a little bit to see it, because we get so lost in the CGI and the actors and actresses and just all the spectacle of it. But there's some other really interesting stuff at play. So I'm definitely interested in talking about that. Okay, so Ant-Man, Quantumania, Kang, you have seen the movie.
I have
not yet seen the movie. I'll probably pick it up on streaming, just to be, you know, realistic about, you know, life and scheduling and all that kind of stuff. We're not going to do a complete breakdown. We may do movie breakdowns again in the future. We kind of have talked about that. But at least for this movie, what is your overall take on the movie as a whole? Just like thumbs up, thumbs down, where are you at with it?
A halfway thumbs up.
Okay.
A halfway thumbs down. It's not a glass empty and it's not a glass full. It's definitely somewhere in between.
Okay.
The movie itself, I enjoyed it for reasons that are really nerdy.
Uh-huh.
I just like seeing comic book characters on screen.
Sure.
So yeah, that was great. Some of the dialogue, some of the plot devices and these things, I didn't particularly care for.
Okay.
But again, this movie was doing heavy lifting. It's setting up everything that's to come in the MCU universe. So it really had a lot to do. And I think if you look at it from that perspective, then the movie was pretty much a success. We're not going to do the spoilery thing. We're not going to talk about the movie, the ins and outs, but we are going to talk about Kang.
All right. So I heard, just quickly on the movie as a whole,
yes,
I've heard really wild takes from other people. Some people really enjoyed it. Some people really, it really kind of annoyed them. I think the one consistent thing that I heard, though, was as much as we like the interconnected universe of the MCU, I think people get a little exhausted when they constantly are having things kind of pushed at them, which are about future things. It's like, okay, introduce like one or two characters, but when you have whole subplots and multiple characters being introduced, I'm thinking of the last Black Panther movie, right, where we had a lot of introductions. I think that's the one of the things that fatigues people. Does that comport with what you feel or what you've heard or read?
I've heard some of those things as well. I don't necessarily agree with that, you know,
assessment. Yeah.
Train of thought.
Sure. Okay.
I didn't think that was the big problem with the movie.
Right. Personally. Oh, okay.
Yeah. It wasn't that it was given too much. I think what it gave, there needed to be more character exposition on Kang.
Interesting.
He carried the movie.
Cool.
The character carried the movie, and the performance by Jonathan Majors carried the movie. I also want to shout out Michelle Pfeiffer, because she was also great in the movie as well.
Okay.
But I think Majors just carried the movie, and I think that's what I came away with, saying, wow, they really have something special in this guy who's mm-hmm. going to play this really big role in the future of the MCU.
So my knowledge of Jonathan Majors really comes from Lovecraft Country, which I think you and I both enjoyed. We were texting back and forth during it, and that was a really amazing performance and an amazing production, both from an entertainment value, but also on a sociological, cultural level.
Like
the things that at least I was learning and became aware of, and the whole thing of horror and African Americans in our country. You know, that is there is a history of horror there, and I thought it really did an amazing job to open up some of that dialogue. But anyway, Jonathan Majors himself, yeah, that was like a wow performance.
Absolutely.
And then I think the next thing, and I didn't know about him prior to that. And the next thing I know, he's, you know, in Loki, and it's like, whoa, okay, what's going on here? This is cool. And yeah, for everyone who has said that the Ant-Man movie wasn't enjoyable or successful for them, nobody has said anything other than positive praise for Jonathan Majors.
Exactly. So exactly.
That's really cool to hear. I'm really glad for his career, because I think, yeah, he's got something for us. He's not done yet.
Yes, he does. He's not done. He's not done. And again, it's really exciting that they have this guy who is so charismatic and who is so in tune with this character on a different way than a CGI Thanos was. Right. So this is going to be really something really that I'm looking forward to. And I think everybody else will look forward to it as well, just to see how he comes back, what he does on screen with the character, just the way the portrayal, his everything about how he moves, about how he speaks, about just the gravitas that he gives to a villain in a quote unquote comic book movie,
right,
is really something that's really going to, I think, amaze people if you haven't seen the movie yet. And I think if you have seen the movie, you're just waiting for his next appearance, whether it's on the big screen or whether it's on the small screen.
That's awesome. That's awesome. All right, so let's talk about Kang in specific.
Yes.
This, as you say, this is a very different villain, big bad, our chief antagonist from Thanos. And it's interesting, you know, Thanos, like you said, was a CGI character, really well voiced by Josh Brolin. But relating to a CGI character and a CGI character's motivations, I think we might psychologically respond differently, where here we have Jonathan Majors, who's a human scaled, you know, person, right? You know, he's operating in human scale and it's live action. So I think that's an interesting note, because it might change the way that we perceive Kang and Kang's motivations. But talk to us about who Kang is. What can you tell us about Kang that is going to set us up for Loki and future Phase 5 movies?
So he's a time traveler. He's extremely one of the most intelligent characters that's ever been written in Marvel Comics.
Okay.
And he's, dare I say, a psychopath. who is hell bent on total control,
okay,
of not just his world, but total control of the entire universe at every point in time. He wow. wants to be the ruler of it all, from the Big Bang to the end. He wants to oversee everything.
Okay.
So that's the character that you're dealing with, someone whose motivation is to control everything from the beginning of time to the end of time. How do you deal with someone who thinks along those lines and who could actually do it?
Is he supernatural at all, or is he just super intelligent and he's a flesh and blood human being?
He's a flesh and blood human being.
Okay.
Born in the 30th century.
Uh-huh.
Super intelligent.
Okay.
And that's it.
Got it. And then he is, through his explorations and his Tony Stark-esque ways, I guess you could say, like, you know, like building his empire, he's made himself very powerful in terms
yes.
of, like, it's very hard to hurt him or do him harm in some
exactly,
way.
Exactly. The Iron Man suits don't compare to anything that Kang has. That's basically what it boils down to. There's nothing that's ever been seen in the MCU mm-hmm. that Kang cannot overcome.
Interesting. That's that's a big threat.
Pretty big.
Yeah.
Pretty big.
Now, he is segmented across time, you know, in different time zones. And so there's different Kangs and different levels of psychopathy, I guess you could say.
Yes.
Like, there's more benevolent Kangs and more evil Kangs.
There are no benevolent Kangs.
Okay.
There are Kangs who try to do good, but at the end, there are no benevolent Kangs.
Okay.
So what we have in the Ant-Man and the Wasp movie is the Kang. In the post-credit scenes, you are introduced to others.
Mm-hmm.
There are variants, but there's only one Kang. Kang the Conqueror is the one.
Okay.
Right? There are other iterations of Kang the Conqueror, but it's the same person
mm-hmm.
at different points of his life.
Interesting. Do you think that the Loki television show is going to illuminate some of that more
yes.
so that we can understand how Kang is working in the multiverse?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Got it.
Definitely. Definitely. So you have variants of Kang,
mm-hmm.
and then you have Kang, what should we call him? We would call him Kang Prime.
Kang Prime, yeah. Yeah, that works.
Kang, the Conqueror, who we see in the movie, is Kang Prime.
Okay.
So there are other iterations of Kang Prime that you are introduced to.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a whole thousands of millions of variant Kangs that you are introduced to.
So I'm really interested. I think that raises a question for me with the Loki television show, where we had the Time Authority. Remind me, I'm sorry, the acronym I'm blanking. Yes. I had it in my head.
TVA.
One way. The TVA. Yeah, I thought that, which is it's such a great, I like the TVA because it reminds me of, it reminds me of the whole Public Works Administration, you know, that sort of post-Depression era, you know, thing. It's like this huge sprawling bureaucracy and it's a cool concept. Anyway, is the TVA aware of Kang? And I think at the end of Loki, if I remember right, there's a statue of Kang in the TVA, in one variant of the TVA's offices. So, you know, how is the TVA managing or relating relative to that? This is an open question. How is the TVA and Kang are interrelating to each other? And maybe that's something that we're going to see play out even more.
I think we will see it play out a little bit. And you have to remember, He Who Remains, that version of Kang, said there was a multiversal Kang war, right? So
right.
Kang is at war with himself.
Yeah.
He's at war with himself. Kang Prime is at war with Kang Prime. Because he's at war with the person that he will become and the person that he was.
Interesting.
Right.
All right, so this is some real mind-bending stuff.
Yes, yes. That's why I say it's the movie did a lot of heavy lifting.
Okay.
And it was really great to see that character portrayed in that way, because it could get you could get boiled down in the minutiae, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can get boiled and you could become really distracted trying to, you know, weave all these threads together and try to make sense of it all. But I think the one thing that we have to remember is that the Kang you saw is the Kang who is the problem. The other Kangs that you see are him. They're the same person.
Okay.
Just at different points of his life.
Crazy. All right. I remember seeing the first Doctor Strange movie and it was a real mind bender. And it's like, now that movie just pales in comparison to what they're doing. It was a very prime, it was priming us for, maybe they knew it, maybe they didn't, but it feels like we have to make ourselves bigger to be able to watch these movies and catch all of the concepts
yes.
that they're pushing at us. They're educating us and bringing us along on this sort of larger story plan.
Absolutely. And one thing that Kevin Feige said recently, and I think I'm quoting him correctly, is that he said that you can think of Phase 5 and Phase 6 as the multiversal saga.
Okay.
Right? So that's what this is going to be. It's going to be a journey throughout multiple times and multiple universes, because that's the story that they're telling. It's not a linear story.
Wow.
It's not point A to point B. It's point A to point A squared.
Right.
And then you get to B minus. Right? So you're going to be, if you've watched the Loki season one and you saw the timeline and all these branches, and even in Endgame, when the Sorcerer Supreme knocks Hulk outside of his body, and says, no, the timeline branches off.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we're going to be experiencing. More so than just jumping to different universes, which is what Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness showed us.
Uh-huh.
Different universes, but at a set point of time. This next phase is about different universes, but also at different set points of time. Right? So you have to wrap your head around. This is not going to be a straightforward, you know, oh, I know what's happening next. No, you don't. We don't know.
This makes me think that the Marvel Studios have an incredibly difficult task ahead of them, because we've been trained as viewing audiences to think and respond to really deeply ingrained patterns of storytelling, of Western storytelling, of North American-centric storytelling that is oftentimes very different than other places and other times. But also, now they're going to be breaking this up. Like you said, it's not only same place, different timelines, but it's different places, different timelines, and within that, different timelines, right? So it's like,
yes, it
folds in on itself. And that is going to be, I think, a big challenge for Marvel Studios to be able to educate the audience for who and where we are now, and to be open to a different style of storytelling that's not linear. Endgame was the Avengers Endgame was a very linear storyline. We build up to this rising action, we have the big climax, we have the denouement, and then we wrap it all up and we mourn our dead and we move on, right? Like, that is a very basic storyline that we're all very familiar with through television, through written things, you know, through just our culture of North American storytelling. This sounds like a whole different ballgame completely.
I think it kind of is, right? And this is comic book storytelling.
Yes. Okay. All right. I'm not a comic book reader, right? So I'm not versed in the same way that you are.
So when you read comic books, this is what happens. You have time traveling Avengers stories. You have time traveling X-Men stories. You have, you know, this is quintessential comic book storytelling.
It's interesting because with the medium of comic books, right, you're trying to sell the next comic book. You gotta, whatever your schedule is, you gotta get that piece of paper on that little wire spinning rack at the corner store. You know, I remember walking, you know, going into the drugstores and having that perfume candy smell, and the comic book racks are there, and you're like, is the new issue out? So they had a pipeline to keep filled. And so it necessitated a different kind of storytelling. I'm theorizing, I'm hypothesizing here about that.
And I think also what is part of comic book storytelling is that plotting of story way before the story is told.
Right, right.
Right.
You got to know, because production, distribution.
You have to know.
Yeah.
You have to know where you're starting, you have to know where you're going, and you're going to have to know where you're going to end up, right? I, as a reader, don't know any of that stuff. I'm just picking up this first issue, and I have no idea where the next issue is going to take me. I have no idea how it's going to end. I don't know. This is the storytelling that the MCU is doing.
Interesting.
We don't know. And I think we are so accustomed to knowing that it's throwing people for a loop. Like, oh man, what are they going to do? That's the beauty for me, I think. And for a lot of other folks, that's the beauty of what they're trying to do. They're really trying not to let you have it all, right? You have to wait.
Interesting.
We're not in a wait society anymore.
No, we're not. That is for sure.
Right? We want it all right now. We want to know where the story's heading. Where are they taking it? How is it going to go? What are they going to do?
Yeah, I was just going to say, ever since we got those first glimpses of Thanos, right? Or, you know, we didn't even see Thanos. I think we just heard his voice, or, you know, we saw, you know, they teased it in a couple of movies, that there's this big bad out there. We all instantly knew that here is our chief protagonist, and that we're going for it. You know, comic book reader or not, they laid it out very simply, that here is a big antagonist, and this is going to be the big conflict. So we knew that. We knew what we were getting into there. Now, we don't have a single point of reference other than Kang. And Kang can be in more places than one.
Yes.
And they're going to show us more places than one and different variants of Kang.
Yes.
And that is disorienting for somebody like me, yeah, who is not used to this comic book style storytelling, to see it on screen.
Yes.
Be it TV or cinema.
And I think that's a great way to put it.
Okay.
the next Kang that we are introduced to may not be the Kang that you've just seen.
Interesting. And Jonathan Majors has got to play that. That is so
he
cool.
He has to play it.
That
exactly.
is so cool.
Exactly. And he has to play different type.
Mm-hmm.
Because each of those prime Kangs, they are not the same. They are not the same in the way they think. They're not the same in the way they behave. They're not the same in the way that they want to affect the world, right?
Yeah.
They all want control. But how they go about getting control is really different. So he's going to have to adapt and change from what we've already seen. And he's done it twice already because you've seen him in Loki.
Right.
And it's completely different from what you get.
Wow.
In Ant-Man and the Wasp.
How cool as, you know, to be an actor in your prime and to be a little bit of the soup du jour, right? Like he's you know, coming out of Lovecraft country, you know. Who's sort of a hot commodity, to be in your prime as an actor and then to have this role that's going to carry you down the way a number of years, but it's not a flat character. It's not a simple one-dimensional character or even a character that has some depth and has to go through some things. These are just different characters, all yes. of the same, yes. you know, prime variation. And then you have to play off of them constantly throughout the TV or movie show that you're getting. So like as an actor, wow, fun, yes. right? Like that's just got to be a great, amazing challenge.
And again, he knocked it out the park.
Okay.
He just knocked it out the park. So these are the things that I'm excited for. That's why I was excited for the movie. I think we spoke earlier in our previous episode when you asked me what I was looking forward to, and I yelled out, Kang, that's what I was looking forward to, right?
Right.
And it did not disappoint in that way.
That's great.
It did not disappoint in that way.
All right, anything else on Kang?
No. I think we should just hold on to our hats and strap in our seatbelts and let's see where the ride takes us.
Sounds good.
Let's see where the ride takes us.
All right, so let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we can start to talk about some of the important characters that we've been introduced to and that we can start to expect. And then we'll get into the meta conversation about the different work, the different forces at work in the MCU.
Sounds good.
All right, and we are back. Jean, we wanted to get into some of the upcoming characters that we have already been introduced to, and I think we might have a few that were, I think most of them we've been introduced to. So you have a huge list here, and we're going to talk about a bunch of them. There might be a few that we don't talk about. But there is a lot of setup happening right here now that we've closed phase 4 officially with Wakanda Forever and opened phase 5 officially with Ant-Man and Quantumania. So let's start working through the list of some of the characters that we've already been introduced and then just give us a little bit of information about each of them so that we've got some context. So when they show up next, whenever that next is, we're not completely lost as to, you know, what this character represents or why are they introducing them in the storylines.
All right. Sounds good. Again, it's a pretty big list, but let's see what happens.
Sounds
let's
good.
See what happens. All right. The first person I wanted to highlight was America Chavez, who we met in, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. The reason why she's going to be important is because her power set is that she can punch holes to other universes.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
She can't just knock you across the street. She's going to knock you to another universe.
Basically. So yeah. She has a lot of the attributes of a superhero. She's really strong. She's really durable. At times, you know, she's been portrayed that she can fly. I don't know if we'll get all of that in the MCU, but I do know that we've already seen her punch holes to different universes. So if Kevin Feige is saying this is the multiversal saga, then having somebody who can actually do that, I think that's going to be pretty important. So the next person we want to talk about is Kamala Khan. She's really big in the comic books right now. And she is a hero that has a lot of sway and a lot of storytelling with the younger set of heroes. She's at the forefront of that push to have younger heroes in the comic books. And I think that's going to be her role in the MCU. Her power set is that she can, in the books, she can become bigger. She can, you know, grow her size or different limbs and things of that nature. In the MCU, it's been said that she's a mutant.
Oh, right.
Which, of course, is super important for us. Since we haven't really gotten a proper X-Men mutant saga in the MCU yet.
Not since Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., because Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. dealt with mutants.
Not mutants, inhumans.
Inhumans, all right. Does Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. still count, that earlier television series, does that still count as canon, or did they give it the Legends treatment?
No, really? It's still canon.
Dude,
it's
so much canon. Crazy stuff is happening on the Earth, it's nuts. I can't, like, if I were an average human being alive on that Earth, you know, with mutants and inhumans Eternals, I don't know, man. I would have a hard time. I'd probably just curl up in my basement into a little ball in a fetal position.
Oh, man, I'd be a photographer. I'd be outside taking pictures.
As much as you can, right on. So we saw Kamala, where did we see her character first introduced?
We saw her in Ms. Marvel,
right,
which is a TV show on Disney Plus. Again, she's going to be really important because she's really important in the comic books. You know, for various reasons, she's, you know, young, she's a teenager, she's from Jersey mm-hmm. City, she's Pakistani, she's a practicing Muslim. And it's really, representation matters, right?
Right.
and if we say that and we mean that, then we need to see these sorts of characters on screen being pretty badass. And I think that's going to be the role that she plays. We're going to see her again in the upcoming sequel to Captain Marvel called The Marvels,
okay,
with Captain Marvel,
okay,
and also with Monica Rambeau, who we saw in the Scarlet Witch series.
Okay. Before we talk about some of that other stuff, I just wanted to touch something really quick about the representation question, which is, you know, we know that there is a toxicity in the marketplace. I don't like to call them fans because fans are people who appreciate the works and aren't sort of degrading the conversation because of reactions and, you know, negative reactions to the fact that, hey, we have a woman superhero, we have a Pakistani superhero, we have a Muslim superhero, right? Like, that's, we saw a lot of it in Rings of Power and the Tolkien stuff and
yes,
Star Wars and all that. So just sort of saying that, oh yeah, that's all over there. We're not talking about that in this podcast specifically, just to acknowledge it. But other people might say, oh, why are we suddenly getting a whole bunch of different types of characters? Well, one of the reasons which you told me about is they've been doing this in the comics for, I don't know, a decade already of having different kinds of superheroes.
Absolutely.
So we're not doing anything on screen that hasn't already been done on the paper. And we're just synchronizing now because of various market forces and technologies and finally getting to the point where we can tell these stories appropriately on screen, you know, using CGI and doing all this kind of stuff. We're just now getting to that point. So that we have these characters from this diverse backgrounds, that's nothing new in the Marvel universe, as you've explained it to me.
Right, and just to be clear, we also have the same problem in the comic books,
okay,
with the racist, the sexist, the misogynist,
right, okay,
who come out anytime there's something that is not white, mm-hmm, is not male, and is not, you know, who doesn't speak English,
right?
So we have those same issues with comic books, and those same people migrate over to
the screen, right? They follow the properties, yeah.
Exactly. We don't care about those people.
Right.
Right. My thing is, you don't have to watch or read. That's it, simply.
Right.
You don't have to watch. You don't have to read.
Right.
Any of these characters. Nobody cares if you do.
Right.
Because I certainly don't.
Right.
And my kid will not. Right. You know what I mean? And that's what I really want to say about those sorts of folks.
Okay.
You don't have to listen. You don't have to watch. You don't have to read. Go away.
Right.
And don't bring these conversations to me, because I'm not here to have those conversations.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I'm not here to talk to you about any of that stuff.
Right.
Any of the ways that you feel that this is going against comic book history. Well, you know what? Kick rocks.
Right. There's no need to justify the fact that we're telling stories in this broad way, and that we're taking a multitude of viewpoints and a multitude of backgrounds and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yes. There's no need to entertain
justify it. Right.
There's no need to, you know, say that it's valid.
Right.
None of that stuff.
Right.
None. And there are plenty of places that people can to go and find, you know, like-minded folks, but you won't find them here.
Right.
So, yeah.
All right. Anything else we need to know about Kamala before we move on to Riri?
Yeah, so she's going to be, I think, a very important character going forward. We're going to see her in the Marvel sequel, Ms. Marvel sequel, the movie called The Marvels, this summer with Captain Marvel, with Monica Rambeau, who's going to play, possibly the name of the superhero is going to be Photon, hopefully, who's another badass character. She has a host of you know, energy-based light power set. She's pretty awesome. At one point, she led the Avengers way back in the 80s.
Okay.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Yeah, so.
You just time warped yourself.
Yeah, definitely. So she's going to be a really cool character to follow as well. We introduced to Riri Williams.
Yeah, switching over to Riri, yeah.
And BP2, who is a really cool character.
She was the young college student in Black Panther 2.
She's a scientist, right? She's super smart. She's an inventor. And she's playing, I think she's going to be possibly set up to be the Tony Stark of this next generation.
Okay.
She already has the armor.
Okay.
So let's roll with that. So,
and we also know her as Ironheart.
And she's going to have a TV show, hopefully, this year. Fingers crossed.
Well, let's segue slightly. I don't want to go too far down on the industry news start point, but we did see some news recently coming out. We definitely have some changes at Disney with Bob, with the Bobs being replaced, and Bob Iger coming back and saying, like, we're going to slow the read that I took was, we're going to put the brakes on slightly, slow things down, so that we can actually get things, we're not rushing things out the door. We're moving forward, but we're not going to just try to flood the channel with stuff. So it felt like they're saying we're going to ease up on production slightly. And I think then you had sent me a link to an article with Kevin Feige had said some stuff. Do you what was your takeaway from that interview with him?
I got the same feeling that you got. That they want to slow it down, don't introduce so many new characters within the calendar year, which is what they've done in Phase 4.
Mm-hmm.
We were hit with a lot.
Yes, we were.
A lot of TV shows, a lot of movies, a lot of things to think about. So I really feel that's what they're going to do, is slow it down so people can really digest what they're seeing.
Right.
And get used to the new characters that they're bringing along.
I was going to say, I don't think from a production standpoint, John mentioned this on one of our other podcasts. I can't remember if it was the Mando podcast or what, but that there's only so many CGI studios and CGI teams in the world. And so much of filmmaking now and television making required. If you're in the pulp world, you know, fantasy, sci-fi, anything like that, you've got to rely on the same small pool of CGI artists and production houses. And I think there might be a bottleneck there too, where, you know, we don't see great CGI in some stuff. I mean, I think maybe I'm theorizing that Book of Boba Fett might have suffered from a little bit of that. Because they're trying to push so much stuff so quickly. There's only so many people to work on these things. So that's a huge bottleneck, as well as just getting the right writers on a project and developing the story so that the story is the story and not something that's just hitting arbitrary marketing deadlines that have been set up by the bigger studio, you know, by the...
Yeah, that's a great point. Shit.
Yeah.
That's a great point, and it makes total sense. It makes total sense. Marvel has been really careful mm-hmm. with cultivating their look.
Yeah, right. Right?
So when you see something that's done, you're like blown away by it.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes really... That makes a lot of sense to just make sure that everything is up to the standard that they've already set.
Right, and develop the stories. Give the writers the time to write the stories that really compel us. Because it's great to have the CGI, but I'll take story over CGI any day of the week.
Right, and that goes back to the point that I made earlier about comic books having that plot
mm-hmm.
from way back.
Mm-hmm. Right,
everything needs to be known where we're going to take things.
Right,
right, before you even read the first issue.
Right.
They've plotted out the entire story, or you've read the first issue.
Right,
and I think that's what we're seeing here. It's they've given us this first story. We don't know where it's going, and it's going to be a slow burn, and I'm okay with that.
All right, so let's get back on track, and let's talk about Shang-Chi.
Shang-Chi. One thing I will say, too, with Kamala Khan and Shang-Chi. Shang-Chi, first of all, he's a master of Kung Fu. In the Marvel Universe, he's known to be the best one-on-one fighter that exists.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Without powers. So he's just, you know, a regular human being who can kick your ass.
Right.
Right.
Okay. Rings or no rings?
Rings or no rings. And sometimes you might be even super powered and he'll find a way to defeat you.
Yeah.
So that's who we're dealing with, right? Now he has the 10 rings, which is very different from the Marvel comic books. So Shang-Chi's another important character. He's been around for forever.
Mm-hmm.
He's not new to Marvel comics. He's not a new character that was just introduced. Where he goes from here is going to be very interesting because where he was at the end of the movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
We see him go off with Wong for some sort of mission. So is he being geared? Is he being prepped to become someone of import in the next phase?
Interesting.
Right. One thing to keep in mind, I've heard a lot of people say, and I'm not sure where I fall on this yet, is that the rings from Shang-Chi and also the bangles in Ms. Marvel, Kamala Khan, that unlocked her powers are related to the same power set that Kang has.
Ooh, interesting.
It's the way that Kang's machines operate.
Okay.
They give off the same sort of glow.
Uh-huh.
And this circular motion about them has people saying, hey, the rings and the bangles are related to Kang.
Cool.
And at the end of Shang-Chi, Legend of the Ten Rings, it's said that those rings that he's wearing are giving off a signal.
Oh, right, right. Like, hey, I'm over here. It's like the one ring, Sauron can feel where his
yes.
ring is, right?
Yes.
There's a symbiote, not a symbiosis, but a connection. Yeah.
And then Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, the way they get to the quantum realm, slight spoiler, is a signal that was picked up in the quantum realm. And via that signal, the person who picked it up was able to draw them into that universe.
Interesting.
So we have all of these. Again, that wasn't a throwaway line when they said it's
getting
off.
Right.
In Shang-Chi's movie.
Right.
And now we have, oh, wow, you're building something that's giving off a signal to the quantum realm. Stop. Don't do it. But the signal has been sent.
Well, I'm glad you are here to pick up on these signals and to help clue us in to this is exactly the purpose of this podcast, is to help give us those key clues so that when we're putting all of these things in context in relation to each other, we understand the bridges and the interconnectivities between the characters and stuff.
So definitely. That's something to take into consideration.
Cool.
Definitely.
When are we going to see Shang-Chi next?
We don't know. They haven't. They haven't said anything about his next appearance in the MCU.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Well, fingers crossed that he's not going to be too far down the road.
The next character is Kate Bishop, who was introduced in the Hawkeye series that was on Disney Plus.
Right. She was the young ingenue that Hawkeye trained with Hawkeye, sort of.
Exactly.
That was of that, just quickly, just that class of first round MCU TV shows, Loki and Hawkeye, I think were the ones that I enjoyed the most. And the Hawkeye romp was a romp. It was a fun Christmas time goofball kind of storyline. And he's trying, you know, the whole thing of him trying to get back home and all that kind of stuff. I just felt like, I could nitpick here and there, but in, at least tonality, that was one of the ones that I think I enjoyed it even more, just on the entertainment level, even more than Loki. And Loki was just like, whoa, this is some weird. There's some weird stuff going on here. I got to try to keep up with it. But Kate Bishop, and I believe we have Echo in there as well.
Yes, we do.
Those were both characters and actor portrayals, and then that television show tonality, I just felt I got a lot of entertainment value from it.
I really enjoyed that Hawkeye series. I thought it was really fun. It was really cool. And you know, it was really cool to see the mantle pass, because that's what essentially that was setting up, is for her to become the Hawkeye,
right?
In the MCU.
And that just quickly to highlight that's one of our big meta themes that we're going to talk about towards the end of the podcast, is this whole turning over, changing of the guard type of stuff that's happening.
Yes. And that was definitely one of those moments.
Right.
So she has no superpowers except that she's a great shot.
Mm-hmm. She's got moxie.
She's got moxie, and she's got a bow and arrow, and
yep,
she'll take you out from a very far, far distance. So that's her superpower, and you hope to see her, you know, become more of a badass fighter as well, because she can kick some ass in the comic books. But yeah, it was really great to see, and they even had the Black Widow in that story as well.
Okay. Do we have an indication when we're going to see Kate again?
Don't know. They haven't announced anything yet. So we'll see. The only thing that they did announce an Echo series.
Uh-huh.
And Echo, in the comic book, she's a mutant who has the ability to make anything that you do. She just sees it and she can do it.
Mm-hmm.
So she's very hard to defeat in that way. She's going to be in her own series.
Right. In this series, is she a mutant, or is she, because it's a deaf character in the television show.
That remains to be seen.
Okay.
They haven't announced it, but I'm of the mindset that she will be.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see, because there's really no reason that she shouldn't be.
Okay.
There's really no reason that she shouldn't be, especially if you've introduced the concept with Namor, with Kamala Khan. There's really no reason that she shouldn't be placed as a mutant as well.
Okay.
And she's getting her own television series.
Right. And that was one of the ones that's possibly, we were expecting it
this year,
but we don't know at this stage.
Right.
Okay.
The next person we'll talk about is She-Hulk.
Okay.
Who is the cousin of Bruce Banner, the Hulk.
Right.
And like the Hulk, she's a Hulk. She was given a transfusion in the comic books by Banner, but in the MCU, they got into a car accident, and some of his blood got into her into her body via cut, and then she became a Hulk.
And she's a smart Hulk from the get-go. She's not a mindless monster like Bruce Banner was when he first Hulked out.
When we first introduced to Bruce Banner Hulk, he was mindless, like you just said. She's not.
Right.
She's an attorney at law, since she practices as the She-Hulk at times. Right? So she walks into the courtroom 8 feet tall, wearing heels, looking completely like a knockout. And not only is she good at the law, but she, if you try to do anything funny in that courtroom, forget about it.
Right.
It's not going down. So she's really, she's a great character. She's one of the, if not the first, I think she was the first character to break the fourth wall in the comic books. And they do some, they do a lot of that in the TV show. And the TV show is really...
Did you watch the whole TV show?
I watched it.
Okay. I think I saw the first couple of episodes, and then life got in the way, and I haven't got back around to it. But I remember I remember people at the end of the series going, talking about the breaking of the fourth wall, and people really liked the somewhat tongue-in-cheek attitude that the show had in a lot of ways.
I think it was a really different show than we've seen from Marvel. It was more sitcom-y than anything that they've done. It hit some, you know, important issues as well, don't get me wrong, but they did it in a very different way from what we've seen them do. And I kind of liked it. I thought it was
okay. Cool.
The next character that we'll talk about quickly is Scar.
Okay.
Who was introduced in the very last episode of She-Hulk. This is the son of the Hulk.
The son of who?
Of Hulk.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay.
So, in the She-Hulk television series, Hulk had to go back to Sakaar. He was summoned back to Sakaar to help out with something. So, he disappeared from the show until the last episode.
All right.
He came back. He came back with his son, who's a teenager, and who's a Hulk, apparently.
Crazy.
This is going to be some interesting stuff.
Yeah.
And what could go wrong with that? He's 15 years old, and he's a Hulk.
Uh-huh.
It's going to be some exciting times. There's going to be some exciting times ahead.
Right.
The last person that we want to really talk about is Cassie Lang.
Yeah.
Who is Scott's daughter.
From the Ant-Man movie.
From Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Right.
And she's a superhero, just like her dad. And just like her dad, she can grow.
Mm-hmm.
She can get really big, gigantic. She has her own suit with pin particles, and that's her power set. She's going to be important as well because she's friends with Kamala Khan. She's friends with Riri and friends with Kate Bishop.
Okay.
So you see where I'm going with this.
Yeah. And I think it's a perfect segue into one of the major themes that we're dealing with, which is this passing of the mantle. So not only do we have this passing of the generational torch from the Avengers, who are, and I can say this because I'm old, but old and broken, some of them aren't with us anymore. It's hard to be a superhero when you get past a certain point. Your body just doesn't work the same way, you know, whether you're, you know, human or not. And obviously some of our Avengers are off and around. But I mean, the experience of fighting Thanos and dealing with the snap broke them, not only physically, but psychologically in many ways, and broke apart that thing. So now we've got this next crop of superheroes that are coming up. And so we're not only dealing with storylines of passing the torch from one generation to the next, but with this new generation coming up, they're young. They're coming into their powers. They're discovering their powers. They're unsure of what having powers means. And if I do this thing that devastates a whole city block, whoa, like I was trying to do good, but then I caused a whole bunch of other problems. So a lot of Sokovia related type stuff. And what was it? I believe it was in Lagos where they blew up that building in one of the Avenger movies. You know, so like there's a lot of ramifications to having power. And of course, we have the oft-quoted, you know, with great power comes great responsibility, all of that kind of stuff. But I think it's more than that, because here you have young people who are struggling with not only developing their own identity, but having their own identity as superheroes. And that adds a lot of pressure and stress that is going to have impacts and is going to shape and affect their development as people.
Absolutely. And I think that's, you know, not just for the young characters as well, because I'm interested to see not only the people that we just spoke about, how they turn out, what they become, mm-hmm. how they become who they're meant to be, mm-hmm. the struggles that they go through, like you said, finding themselves as they're growing up with these incredible powers and incredible responsibility. What does that mean? Mm-hmm. But also the people who are teaching them, right? Those mantles are being passed, have been passed down as well.
Mm.
What is Sam Wilson going to be going forward?
Mm-hmm.
He's Captain America. What does that mean for him?
Right.
What does that mean for us?
Mm.
You know, to have a Black Captain America,
mm-hmm.
you know, hold the shield. What does that mean in how he is going to be a leader, not only to the contemporaries that he has, but for also the kids that he's going to eventually have to come into contact with, mm-hmm. and try to tell them, you know, how to be who they're supposed to be, because that's what Cap was,
mm-hmm.
right, in the MCU. Cap was Steve Rogers, was the moral voice, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is Sam going to be that moral voice? Is he going to be the person that everyone looks to and say, man, we got to be more like him?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what all the Avengers wanted to do. They wanted to be like Cap. They wanted right. his respect.
Because Cap had a kind of selflessness. He yes. was about service. He was about,
yes.
it's bigger than you or
America.
Yeah.
right? So does Sam follow in those footsteps?
Right.
And what does it mean for him to follow in those footsteps, but also follow in those footsteps as a Black man?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a dynamic that, you know, has played out in the comic books, and they did a great job of storytelling, and they continue to do a great job of storytelling, because both Steve Rogers and Sam Wilson in the comic books right now are known as Captain America, right? Mm-hmm. They're sharing the mantle. How does that work in the MCU, though? That's a question that I have with the passing of the torch.
Right.
Because I don't think there's a bigger torch that's been passed, right?
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
I think this is the biggest one.
Interesting. Yeah, because you're right. Captain America for the Avengers and all that they were dealing with was really the tree trunk that was holding them all together, you know?
Absolutely.
And you know, it's like, okay, you got a super suit and you're really super smart, or you're big and green and you can punch and smash, and you've got a hammer and you can fly around and call lightning. But those are all sort of externalizing forces, things that you can use to fight against an external foe. But every time that there was internal dissension and internal disagreement and strife about what we are doing, is it right, is it wrong, what effect are our powers having, it always came back to Cap as the adjudicator and as the person who is routing all of that emotional energy, as well as sort of dealing with the moral harms of things. Yeah, he really was the moral conscience of the Avengers. I never really thought of it that way before. That's really cool.
I think that's one of the biggest, you know, changes that's occurring in the MCU currently, and I really want to see where they go with it.
Sure.
And like you said, for all these other characters, these new characters, these young characters, how they become who they're meant to be, it's going to be fascinating storytelling.
Right.
You know, the options that they have are really limitless. We all, you know, if you're of age and can remember to the time where you were, you know, 14, 15, 16, not yet 20, life was pretty hectic.
Right.
In different ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not to say that as you grow and become an adult, life isn't hectic, but imagine being in your last year of high school, first year of college, and you have to, you know, drop everything and go fight a multiversal war.
right.
like, what are we talking about here? And not to even mention, you know, Spider-Man Peter Parker is still in this universe, right?
Right. Yep.
He just graduated high school.
Right.
His friends just went off to college.
And he was in space, right? Like, you know, he was there with you know, dealing with like space sorcerers and, you know, like,
yes,
it was wild what he did. Yeah. Like, how do you process that as a kid? When your brain is still developing, right? You know, your frontal lobes are still developing and getting connected up to everything else.
So I think the storytelling that can be had, that can be told, is going to be really interesting. And the first stab that we'll get at it is with the Marvels, right? In that movie, where, you know, Kamala is going to be with Captain Marvel and with Monica Rambeau, Monica Rambeau is new to her powers as well. So that's going to be an interesting dynamic as well, because here we have Kamala Khan, who's new to her power set, who's new to this whole superhero business, who's a teenager. And we also have Monica Rambeau, who's also new to her power set and the superhero business, who's an adult, a grown woman. What are they going to be like when they find each other?
Right.
How are they going to relate or not relate to each other?
Right.
Both are women of color.
Mm-hmm.
How does that relate to how they view the world and how they view what they're supposed to do in the world?
Mm-hmm.
Is that different from Captain Marvel?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is that different from how a soldier who went and fought out in space,
mm-hmm.
who came back and was recruited into this super secret, you know, type of organization, and who's always looking for the next order to go and do something of import?
Mm-hmm.
Is that going to be interesting to mm-hmm. watch on screen? The dynamics of those three people?
Right.
I think, yes, it will be. It can be. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to seeing how Riri becomes who she's supposed to become. She's in college. She just fought Atlantis. I almost said Atlanteans.
Right.
I almost said it, but I didn't say it. She just fought people who breathe underwater.
Right. <You know? laughs> Right.
With a man who has wings on his ankles and can fly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what does she do when she goes back to school?
Right. Right. Yeah. How do you process that?
You acclimate.
Yeah.
How do you even think about acclimating?
Yeah.
You know, me personally, I probably would have dropped out. You know, I would have come back from Wakanda and I would have dropped out.
Like, wasn't that Iron Man 3 where we were dealing with sort of the PTSD of being Tony Stark? I think it was 3, wasn't it? Or was it 2?
I think it was 3.
Yeah.
No, it might have been 3.
Yeah.
It might have been 3. And so these are the questions that I have. And also, you know, when we spoke about Shang-Chi, you know, it's his father that he got the rings from.
Right.
His father who was, you know, hell-bent on unleashing this thing that could have destroyed the world. And he had to stop his dad from doing so.
Right. All right, John, let's take another quick break. And then when we come back, we can talk about some of these other themes that we want to touch base on before we get into the end of the podcast. All right, so we'll be right back. All right, Jean, and we are back, and we want to keep talking about some of these broader contexts for what we're seeing in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We just talked a bunch about the handing of the torch between the generations of superheroes, how young people are going to have to be dealing with their new, in some cases, newfound powers, and there is still yet more going on in a larger context, things around magic and the supernatural and a whole bunch of other stuff. So what have you got for us there to look out for with these more, you know, the weave that is creating this fabric of stories that we're telling, these deeper themes?
Well, the first thing I want to say is we don't need space stones to affect the universe in a grand way.
Uh-huh.
That's the way Thanos was able to do what he did.
Mm-hmm.
He was searching for the power that he didn't have in order to affect the universe in ways that he wanted to.
Okay.
We have all sorts of beings who need to look outside of themselves to do what they want to do on a large and grand scale.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't talk about the Eternals, but we met the Celestials.
Right.
Right. In the movie, The Eternals. These are overpowered super beings who basically birth galaxies, right? They make suns and they seed life and they do the things that Thanos wanted to do, but couldn't only do if he had the gauntlet.
Right.
We're dealing with a whole other set of power that we have not been exposed to prior to in the MCU.
Okay.
In Thor, we met the personification of the universe and eternity.
Mm-hmm.
They showed us versions, not the actual persons, but they showed us that the embodiment of death, the living tribunal, which is probably the second most powerful force in the universe, exists.
Interesting. And that gets into almost metaphysics and supernatural type of stuff.
It does. It does. And
magic. I mean, like, it's like it's there's the off-quoted quote of like anything that is of sufficiently advanced technology, it might as well just be magic to you or I, right?
That's a fact. And that's what Thor said in his first movie, right? You think it's magic, but for us, it's just science, right?
Right. Yeah.
You think our science is magic, and vice versa. So we have things that we consider magic. You know, what do they call the Sorcerer Supreme a Sorcerer Supreme for?
Right.
Because there's no explanation for the things that Sorcerer Supremes can do. So we have these concepts of good magic and bad magic that we've been shown in WandaVision. You have Agatha Harkness, who wields black dark magic. I don't like to say black magic, but dark magic.
Mm-hmm, right.
And we have, you know, Doctor Strange, who, you know, is on the side of good and wields his magical powers to try to protect people.
Mm-hmm.
And we have Scarlet Witch, who we don't know where she falls. We don't know which side of the aisle she's going to fall on eventually. She was evil in the last one that we saw her in Multiverse of Madness, but doesn't mean that the next time we see Scarlet Witch, which we will see Scarlet Witch the next time, that she's going to be the same way.
Mm-hmm.
We've been introduced to supernatural beings. If you haven't seen Werewolf at Night on Disney Plus, you should give it a watch. It's really cool. They introduced us to werewolves and monsters and monster hunters. That's, you know, I don't know what else you want to get from the MCU, because they're giving you everything that you could possibly want. They're giving you time travel. We're getting, you know, space travel, the cosmic. And we're getting werewolves. And we know that we're getting Blade, a vampire hunter.
Right, right.
So
now, isn't Marshall Ali is going to be playing that?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
What a trip to be walking in the footsteps of Wesley Snipes.
Oh, absolutely. Iconic character.
Yeah,
right?
And that's so long ago that movie first came out, and to bring that back, wow.
98. So it's really something great to see that they're just not keeping it to the realm of possible.
Mm-hmm.
They're expanding what can be possible.
Mm-hmm.
They're giving you things that we never could imagine being real, right? But this is comic book stuff, man. This is, you know, Marvel's telling cosmic stories.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting space travel. We're getting aliens. We're getting Skrulls who are trying to,
right,
you know,
Secret Invasion, man.
Earth.
Fingers crossed for that show.
Yes, 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 yes. So there are so many, you know, things that are being worked. We had technology with Iron Man,
mm-hmm.
right? How human beings can overcome their own limitations using the power of their brain, right?
Right.
The supernatural. We have the cosmic.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the magical. And then we have someone who, in the villain of the day, we have someone who doesn't care about any of that stuff.
Right.
Because he's seen it all.
Mm-hmm.
And he's probably done it all.
Mm-hmm.
And he's conquered it all. Right? So.
So what? Yeah. Yeah. What do you do with that storyline then?
How are you going to defeat this guy? This character?
So that was my sort of follow-on comment here was going to be, and I touched on this earlier, is the studio has a massive challenge in front of it. How are they going to tell these stories? How are they going to tell these stories in a compelling way? How are they going to tell these stories that continue to support the box office, right? Like they're a business, you know, they're Marvel Studios is still part of the mouse. And, you know, that those are corporate businesses. So you have that pressure as well. So it's a really tough line that Feige and the rest of the team at Marvel Studios are going to have to walk. Because these are really big concepts and thoughts that don't fall neatly into traditional storytelling packages.
Absolutely. If we just think about it, every movie, every TV show is not going to be a 10 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
What you want is to get something out of each one of those things.
Right.
Each series, each movie, you want it to lead you down the path. Now, you may not enjoy all of it, and that's fine. That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what they're actually doing is commendable because they are piecing and weaving together a story that people might think they know, but we really don't.
Okay.
Marvel Studios knows where this goes.
Okay.
They know how it's going to link.
Okay.
They know what's going to link. They know what's not going to link. They know what's going to be canon, what's not going to be canon. They know everything that they're doing is already plotted out.
Okay.
For us as the viewer, we just have to believe that. That right. It's not just something that's being thrown at the bulletin board and saying and hoping that it sticks.
Right, right.
I don't think that's how they're operating.
Okay.
So, yeah, these are really big concepts.
And it doesn't mean that they can't, right, fail on an individual basis.
Exactly. Exactly.
I think, you know, we're just starting Mandalorian right now, and there's a lot of chatter in the spaces on our Discord and in other spaces where people are like, I'm having problems rectifying what happened in Book of Boba Fett relative to Mando. It's like, well, maybe they just effed up a little bit in Book of Boba Fett and they're trying to fix and clean it up.
Right.
So, our bad, you know, and of course they're not going to say that in a corporate speak kind of way. They'll kind of make some maybe soft statements or work around it a little bit. But you can be playing with huge concepts that are really meaningful and deep and really interesting storytelling processes, and you can eff it up. And it's a marker of just like in life, right? It's not that you messed up. It's how you pick yourself up again, how you relate to it, and how can you, you know, keep telling the story? Can you keep moving forward? Can you,
right?
You know, can you fix anything that's broken? Can you repair a relationship and move forward with your life or move forward with your, you know, your storytelling? If we're talking in those grand schemes. So yeah, I think like with Book of Boba Fett, they effed up a little bit.
Yeah, and that's okay.
You know, in Quantum, you know, and again, I haven't seen Quantumania yet, but, you know, maybe they effed up a little bit. You know, that doesn't mean that they shouldn't stop trying.
Doesn't mean that everything that they do, you're going to relate to.
Right.
You may not like the supernatural.
Mm-hmm.
You may not want to see werewolves and vampires.
Mm-hmm.
I do.
Mm-hmm.
But that's okay. Right?
Right.
If you're digging and wanting this story that they're telling, this multiversal saga that they're giving you, then you will find that. But that doesn't mean there's not going to be space for other types of stories to fit into that. And you may not want to see all of it. And that's okay. That's all right.
Yeah, we got Guardians of the Galaxy coming up. That'll be a nice space shoot 'em up style thing, right?
Absolutely. Yes, yes. And on the heels of Guardians, we have, you know, the Miss Marvels, the Marvels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that movie, which is also going to be space bound. In ways. So, yeah.
And we've got Secret Invasion, which is going to be spy drama thriller type stuff and political intrigue.
Only with heroes that can shapeshift.
Yeah. Right? I am really hoping, I'm really fingers crossed that Secret Invasion will kind of scratch that Andor-like itch for the MCU world. I mean, the trailers are looking hot. You know, but we know trailers are that's the purpose of a trailer.
Oh, look high.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. I know that you and I have been talking about it. I don't know if we're going to be able to get to cover Secret Invasion in full episode by episode, but we're definitely going to be talking about it one way or another when it comes out.
Once it comes out. Yes, yeah. Definitely. And again, this is the thing that I want to, you know, I harp on it, and I say it all the time.
Okay.
You may not dig everything that they throw at you.
Right.
And it's okay.
Yeah.
And it's okay.
Be cool with it. All right. Well, that's a good note to end on. Jean, thanks very much for the conversation today. I'm really glad we were able to get this back on track, and I'm looking forward to covering some more Marvel stuff. We've got some, like we said, some cool properties coming down the pipeline.
Yeah, this was fun, as always, and I'm looking forward to the next time.
Sounds good. All right, so in this section here, one of the things that we always like to do, you know, we talked about before, we've got a Patreon, and we always like to acknowledge and thank our patrons of every membership level. Your support makes it possible for us to be able to do these, not only materially, but also psychologically. It's really great to get the subscription notifications and the messages from patrons when they have a chuckle or a laugh or they enjoyed something that we did. It really keeps us energized. It keeps the wind in our sails. So to all our patrons, thank you. To our Lore Master patrons, which are our highest tier, we always like to give a shout out. And at the time of this recording, which I'm not sure when we're going to release this exactly. Anyway, at the time of recording, we have 14 Lore Masters, which is the $10 tier. And it's like, blows my mind every time.
Amazing.
It is really amazing. So, to our 14 Lore Masters, Samartian, Cyrus, Mark H., Michael G., Peter O., Michelle E., Michael G., David W., Brian P., Nick W., SC, Bettina W., Adam S., Nancy M., and Lavinia T. Thank you all so very much for your ongoing support. It means the world to us.
Amazing. Amazing.
Absolutely. All right. Programming notes. We're in the middle of March here. We're at the start of March. You know, this podcast may drop sometime in the middle to late March. So it's hard to give you specifics about what's, you know, when certain podcasts are happening. But here's just a broad roundup of what's going on. We're finishing up on The Last of Us on HBO. It's been an amazing season so far. We're going to do a season wrap-up podcast that should drop on the 21st of March. So if you have feedback for the series, hit us up at The Last of Us, TLOU at thelorehounds.com. We've also started Mandalorian Season 3. Episodes should be dropping on Thursdays for the 8-episode run, so join us for that. We're also going to cover Ted Lasso. That is going to be an interesting thing. We've never really covered a comedy before, so we're not sure exactly what our format is, but episodes for that should drop either on Fridays or Saturdays as we go. And it's a long run. It's like, what is it, 12 or 15 episodes? It's not short, but we're excited because it looks like it's going to be a really fun episode. Fun season as well. So those are the current shows that we've got going on. Special projects-wise, we are just about to drop our first Earthsea Book Nook series with Marilyn R. Pakila, our favorite Tolkien scholar. This is a book written by a woman named Ursula K. Le Guin. She has a huge impact on the fantasy literature genre and literature in general. And we're going to be doing a monthly Book Nook series where we're going to cover each of the four books of the Earthsea series, one a month. So if that hasn't already dropped, it will be just dropping. Look for that. We're really excited about it. Silmarillion Stories is continuing. The end of March, John and I are going to be talking about the coming of the elves and the captivity of Melkor. I just read my chapter today. It's a very cool chapter, and we're going to get into it, and that should drop sometime the last week of March. New project, The Lorehounds Play. We're going to be, John is teaming up with our buddy Brandon the Bard, and they're going to be doing video game related stuff. So they're going to talk about video games, they're going to critique and review, and kind of do breakdowns like we do with our regular television shows. So that is a really cool new addition, and I'm not sure when those are going to drop, but be on the lookout. We will let you know when that is ready to go. Lastly, we just did a guest spot with Maester Anthony on his continuing read-along with the Game of Thrones series books, the Song of Ice and Fire series. That's over on the Bald Move Hot D feed. We just did a chapter with him about Theon. He invited us back, and we're going to be doing a chapter on Arya, and that should drop sometime in April. We'll keep you posted. And we've invited Maester Anthony over to be on Silmarillion Stories, and that will be coming up, I believe, in June is when Maester Anthony is going to be joining us. Other than that, whew, March is a crazy month. We have a lot of content coming out.
Wow.
So, you know, keep posted. Again, if you feel so inclined, please join us on the Patreon. We have a Discord server. We have a nice little community. People are chatting about stuff over there. Link in the show notes below. For feedback for this show, remember mcu@thelorehounds.com, or just head over to our website and use the contact form or leave us a voicemail. Jean, in terms of MCU universe stuff, what properties are coming at us? What are the next TV and movies that we should be keeping an eye out for?
So like we said, Secret Invasion.
Yep. No date for that yet, right?
No date waiting. For that.
Okay.
If you're into the animated stuff, the What If series. After that is Guardians. After Guardians is Guardians is the movie, Guardians 3. After Guardians 3, we get the Marvels, hopefully. And towards the end of the year, with hoping for Loki.
Okay.
Season 2.
Okay.
And maybe some Echo.
All right. So, and we'll keep putting the MC Universe podcasts out as we can. If we're able to, we might do some more deeper coverage of Secret Invasion. We might even do some actual movie reviews in the future. So that might be fun.
That sounds fun.
Yeah,
it does.
So, you know, stick around. If you're digging the content, let us know. Give us some feedback. But otherwise, thank you all for checking out this podcast. Jean, thank you, as always, for being my partner with this.
Thank you, David, and thank you, everyone, for listening, and hope to hear from you guys soon.
We'll see you next time.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.